You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Is there anything better than cracking open a cold beer and listening to your favorite podcasts? No, sir, and I'm here to tell you that the beer you should be cracking is one from our new sponsor, Circle Brewing, located in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. You can have a frosty one in their fabulous tap room where lots of seasonal specials await you, or you can get lots of their treats in the bottle or can at your local craft beer retailer. Try their award-winning Alibi Blonde or their diabolically rich Devil Knight Barrel Age Stout. They have so many solid choices, and they are the official sponsor of OneOfUs.net. Support Circle Brewing and support us, and we really need your support. There is no site without subscribers, and that depends on you. Please think about becoming a subscriber, because we cannot do this without you. The four different subscription tiers are there to give different flavors of bonus content, but we absolutely need your help, whether you sign up to give $2, $5, $10, or $25 a month. Don't be one of those people who loves something but won't lift a finger to keep it around. Help one of us and keep those podcasts coming. Everybody's got to do a meta film these days. You got to have your own take on it. And while the on-the-nose titled, which I think is funny, Isn't It Romantic, is certainly the most meta romantic comedy film ever made about romantic comedies, it feels a little lesser just because we've already had Enchanted.
Well, what are you talking about, Chris? She's a rebel.
It was more so we've already had I Feel Pretty.
Yeah, which was, I don't think, anywhere near as good as this.
No, although not at all. This was how you do that concept correctly.
It was treading down a similar corridor, but this one, like I said, was much more sort of like directly, hey guys, almost look into the camera. So you know this is just going to be a romantic comedy about romantic comedies that we just talk directly about all the things in romantic comedies that you recognize. Which is not surprising when I found out after the fact this was directed by Todd Strauss-Schulson, who apparently also directed The Final Girls, which is exactly that, but for horror movies.
Sure.
Where it's pretty much the same thing, where a girl who hates horror movies gets trapped in a horror movie.
Did she hit her head?
And no. It's much more supernaturally in this particular one. But she gets trapped in a horror movie, and they have to keep rolling their eyes at all the horror tropes that everyone knows that are kind of old and ridiculous that mm-hmm. they still happen in horror movies at all. Here, it's Rebel Wilson, who is someone I genuinely enjoy as an actress when she's cast correctly. I mean, I still think she was so good in Pitch Perfect, you were like, oh, man.
Yeah, she's really
good. Actually, I enjoyed her in the second and third, too, and those movies weren't as well received.
I think her
performances were really funny.
A lot of people said she was the best thing about the sequels, her and Kendrick.
Completely agree.
But she doesn't always get cast in the best roles, which is an unfortunate problem with being someone who is a bigger person like Rebel Wilson is. I mean, I think she's gorgeous, but
I think she's beautiful. This whole movie, I can take my eyes off of her.
But she plays a Australian architect living in New York City who she's very smart. She has a lot of friends in her life. She is generally well-liked at her office, but she's also kind of treated like
She's a pushover.
People are like, hey, will you throw this away for me? Who worked for her? That sort of thing. And she just kind of goes with it. But as she reveals early on, she's very, very cynical about ever actually having a good, like, you know, the things that other people
having
expect
a,
to
like
find.
A whirlwind romance. She having think that's in the cards for
her. Like, or at all, even possibly, you know. And she's got like lots of people in her life who are very supportive, nonetheless. Like Adam Devine plays her best friend in The Office,
who was also her love interest in Pitch Perfect.
Was he really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't remember that.
And I think he's actually really great in general, and I'm glad he's
A really interesting choice for a leading romantic lead, actually, because he has kind of the build, but he's not a Hemsworth.
He's dorky.
He's dorky.
Betty Gilpin plays Whitney, who's her assistant and one of her best friends as well. And we see that like all of this insecurity started from when she was a little girl with a nice little cameo from Jennifer Saunders playing her mom, who
she's hilarious.
The little girl's watching Pretty Woman and just all like, oh, she's like, it's all bullshit. That shit will never happen to you because look at you.
And she's you're having like, a red wine ice cream float.
Yeah, which sounds really good. But but anyway, she ultimately does the thing that happens in these sort of movies where she hits her head and she wakes up inside of a romantic comedy. But the twist is here, this is the last place in the world that she wants to be.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a romantic comedy in the sense that, like, nothing about it is realistic at all. It's a romantic comedy made up of every trope that she hates about romantic, well, that I hate about romantic comedies, that she explains at length well before the scene even happens. There's a, like, 5-minute scene where she tells you every single thing about romantic comedies that sucks.
I'm usually not a fan of a movie telegraphing how what's going to happen throughout it, but I found that scene genuinely funny because they made little jokes throughout it as well. The bathroom scene and some other...
That scene is funny. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie would have been much more funny if they hadn't already told us every joke that was going to happen in the rest of the movie in that scene. Where I was like, I feel, and I was arguing with Martin about this before the movie, he was like, I don't think the, and I feel like he's being too cynical of audiences. He's like, I don't think the audience would have been smart enough to figure out the jokes without them telling you ahead of time. And I wildly disagree. This is the audience are people who have watched all of these movies it's making fun of. And while they do recognize that these are tropes that happen again and again, they just don't care.
I kind of doubt they would recognize the movies they directly crib from in the actual romantic scenes.
Possibly. I don't know. But
I do agree with you, though, Chris. I think the audience would have picked up on it, not only because we're not all idiots, but also because when it would happen, actually happen, she would say, oh, you're my gay best friend.
Right. There's a lot
of announcing.
I feel like the initial release of these jokes is they go, oh, now here's that joke. She already told us what it was going to be. And eventually those jokes find a way to elevate to a point that they end up being funny all on their own, you know, like despite they already told you what the joke was. But I totally forgot, by the way. I'm Chris.
I'm Kim.
I'm Ben.
Yeah. We are the team that volunteered bravely to see a movie called Isn't It Romantic right before Valentine's Day.
I will say, though, talking about that they kind of telegraphed the jokes, and maybe it's because they telegraphed it, but I do think the times that I most enjoyed this movie were the little jokes that they didn't overly telegraph or you didn't see coming. Like, there's little things. There's one, I forget the exact line, where they throw gay in at the...
It made me laugh so hard, and no one else in the theater, I think, just caught it, where the gay best friend is telling her everything that happened to him that's, like, super, you know, generic, really wildly gay best friend trope stuff. And she goes, well, stop. I don't need to hear the play by gay.
That's it. Yeah, that was a great one.
That's pretty fucking funny.
Also, there's little things like when she's first getting hit on by Liam Hemsworth, there's a sign behind them, like, from here to eternity. It's like, cool. Little things. There's like your set designer that you let do whatever they wanted to actually kind of planned out some great things here.
And that's the thing, is like this world that she lives in. I mean, like, right off the bat, she knows something's wrong because her apartment is suddenly huge and beautiful and perfect, and it's filled with perfect clothes. Her whole apartment building's changed. Her whole street is filled with, like, bridal shops and cupcake shops and stuff. And she's like, okay, something is off. And the guy who was the kind of douchey dude who she was supposed to be pitching her architect idea to at work in the normal world, played by Liam Hemsworth, encounters her here and is just swept off his feet by her. Like, you know, this billionaire guy riding in the back of a limousine is like, oh my god, you're breathtaking. And she's like, okay, what is going on? Yeah, who's suddenly Australian?
That was a pretty funny joke.
But like every street of New York is beautiful, as she points out. It smells like lavender, so she knows something's wrong.
I was so happy she said that. Whenever somebody I've had so many people ask me, oh, would you live in New York? And I'm like, New York seems cool, but if you actually go there, it smells like shit.
It depends on when. In the summer, it's really bad.
I don't want to live any place where any season it smells like shit.
Bill Hicks used to have a funny joke. It's like, he's like, you know, people always tell me you should stop smoking. You'll get your sense of smell back. He's like, dude, I live in New York City and I hate to break it to you. I don't want my sense of smell back. But as this goes along, yeah, it's a thing where she starts figuring out, I don't want to be in this world. This is really annoying and not real. I just want to get back to my real life. So I guess what I have to do is follow the way these things go, which means I got to fall in love. And there's got to be worse things than falling in love with this incredibly hot billionaire guy, Luke Hemsworth. Liam Hemsworth, sorry. And because Luke's not that hot.
No.
And meanwhile, her best friend, Adam Devine, has a sort of a ridiculous meet cute with Priyanka Chopra, who also, much like Liam Hemsworth in this movie, is so impossibly gorgeous she looks like she can't really be real.
They're both beautiful and extremely wealthy.
Yeah, and completely inaccessible in any real world sort of sense. But, you know, both of them are like, no, you're perfect for me. And of course, I mean, you know early on where this is going, even listening to our review. I mean, the movie tells you before they even get into the meta exactly where this is happening, you know, because she even is like, Adam's divine is like, hey, you should come out to karaoke. She's like, no. And her friend is like, girl, what are you doing? He keeps asking you out. It's like, no, he's just my friend. You're like,
okay. The thing that kind of pissed me off, though, is like, they show in the beginning that she's very smart and self-aware. She's aware of every romantic comedy trope. And she can't see that when she's in the romantic comedy trope. They're like, oh, this just fell in my lap to be with him. There's been no, you know, made-up conflict, which every romantic comedy has the most made-up conflict possible.
Right.
And it's like, she's like, nope, this is just going to work out because he's in love with me. He's like, You just said that you know every romantic comedy trope, and now you're just ignoring the biggest one, which is made-up conflict.
Well, she wanted it to be that awesome comedy trope where the beautiful, handsome billionaire falls in love with you.
She wanted it to be Pretty Woman, not a slightly more modern-day one.
Where it's actually Pretty in Pink with Ducky and the girl getting together, where it's actually your best friend you're supposed to be with the whole time.
Yeah, it does actually turn into much more My Best Friend's Wedding for the whole, like, second half of the movie.
And it does find a kind of very last minute way of going like, oh wait, even that is really kind of tiresome in a meta film. We should have a little something extra. So they find a little last minute layer to add on. It's like, well, maybe not. It's not really about being in love with your best friend or being in love with anybody.
I still felt that term kind of felt like such a unnecessary extra left turn after they took that long to get to that point, though.
I mean, it really was. It felt super last minute, and I felt like the film was working just fine on its own merits. I would have been okay without it, but yeah, go ahead.
I love that it subverted itself because she saw that things weren't working, and at the beginning of the movie, she said she didn't like romantic comedy. She ended up not being in a romantic comedy because she made it where that wasn't the case. I feel like she chose her own destiny. Mm-hmm. I thought the ending was really powerful, and I was very satisfied with it. Powerful might be a strong word.
Were you weeping?
I there is moisture, but nothing fell.
No.
So we're good.
I mean, I'll tell you that I think that Rebel sells it. I mean, they're smart enough to go, wait a minute, this is Rebel Wilson, who has an astonishingly great singing voice. We have got to find a way to have more than one musical sequence in here with her because she has got just a absolute to die for voice. And sure enough, they pull off both those sequences while playing with the meta aspect of the romantic comedy and the whole, like, how was it everyone knew the choreography?
I will say, and again, with the set design in that scene, in that karaoke scene, there's a bunch of great things where, again, it's very much a callback to the singing scene in My Best Friend's Wedding, but then there's also little things. Like, I noticed one of the guys dancing in the has toilet paper stuck to his shoe. It's like, cool, it's one with a weird flare, like a ribbon, but it's also like, yeah, that's them saying it's semi a realistic world where people were actually just in this place, in this, you know, restaurant, living their lives, and then they started singing.
I suspect there were probably a lot of callback jokes to specific movies that I missed only because they're movies I saw once in the theater and never went back to because they're chick flick
movies, probably.
Well, there's a lot of romantic comedies I love, but they're not always the same ones that perform way crazy well, you know? I mean, like, anything by Richard Curtis is great. Notting Hill and Four Weddings and a Funeral.
I appreciate the call out for Notting Hill, as you said.
Yeah.
Like, they mentioned that. I'm like, cool, that is one of the very best ones. Good job.
Yeah. No, it really is. But I'm sure there were jokes in here about 13 going on 30 or whatever, 27 dresses that I was right over my head. Did not get. But I do think there's enough going on here to be entertaining even for people who, like, firmly are in the camp of, oh my God, I fucking hate romantic comedies.
It's very short.
It is short.
Make you stick around very long.
No, it's very breezy. It gets to the point very quickly. And like I said, it has a set series of things, you know, it has to go through it. If I have a big complaint, like I said, it's like, A, it tells you everything it's going to do in the first 10 minutes of the movie. And then it just, like every romantic comedy, has, it almost is a little tiresome of going, even as the character's realizing, I guess we got to do this now. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, we do, because that's what happens in a romantic comedy. So I guess we'll just wait around. But part of that is, like I said, I tend to like romantic comedies that do subvert things. This doesn't subvert the genre. It just comments on it the whole time. It actually falls firmly into the genre, period, which is fine.
It's a little bit more flat for me in that way. Yeah, where it's just like, you had so much chance to, you know, you can make fun of romantic comedies very easily, and you kind of did that, but you didn't, you know, besides that left turn at the end, you didn't really subvert too much with it. you just, you know, you made fun of PG-13 jokes, which Deadpool has done. Like, you're not doing, I think, anything that really amazes me or anything that would make me recommend this movie to someone necessarily besides, yeah, the cast was fun and the song segment or musical segments were fun.
Like I said, there were jokes here and there that I thought were really funny. And I think the cast was, on the whole, giving it their all. We haven't even called up Brandon Scott Jones, who plays Donnie, the next door neighbor, who when we first meet him in the real world is just a stoner guy. And then in this world, he's constantly in her house for reasons she can't figure out. And
just
is
magically
like, wearing short shorts.
So gay, she's like, you are a really offensive stereotype of gay people.
She's like, you're setting gay rights back 15 years.
But I actually, he was one of my favorite characters. Every time he showed up on screen, there was a laugh in the audience.
He still is really good. I love the outfits they gave him. He's always wearing these one-piece like tops and short shorts that have ridiculous designs on them.
I'm sure your audience knows this person, but if Martin was a skinny white gay man, he would wear similar outfits.
Oh, my God. I can't even.
Very flamboyant.
My brain is rebelling at the idea of me
really,
even trying to picture that.
Morph this. Into,
yeah, I can't. I can't picture Martin as anything but Martin.
You all out there can do this, so I believe in you.
It was a weird little cameo, by the way, by Tom Ellis playing a doctor who's the first person she sees in the metaverse.
I thought he was a little bit above these minor cameos. Well,
I mean, he is technically pretty just a television actor, but it's a pretty iconic role as he plays Lucifer and is definitely a total dreamboat on that show. You know, he's like, wow.
Well, and they also made the joke that he's CW hot. Yeah. Like, you know what you're doing.
Very true. But yeah, that's all. He just has the one little role to be the first ridiculously hot guy that she encounters.
Yeah. I will, since Ben mentioned set design, I do think they did a really great job separating reality and this romantic universe. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was pretty beautiful. It smelled good, apparently. But also the characters in the real world, they look frumpy as heck.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has split ends. Nobody's seen blush. It's just a kind
of
a mess.
Because New York is more like a bizarre mix of every type. Mm-hmm. You get that in the same office with somebody who hasn't figured out they're not about to walk down like a catwalk, you know?
They make the TV show The Office of Glamorous. Like they're frumpier than that somehow.
It's true.
I will say the big change on Betty Gilpin when it's between the two worlds is like, okay, you would full Cruella de Vil on a you know, fantasy world costume. But I will say that she was maybe my biggest letdown in this movie because they do nothing with her character besides, like, yes, we're now adversarial because we both work in the same office and we're women. It's like, there's other women in the office, including your office manager, who you actually had an adversarial relationship with. But suddenly in this alternate universe, she's somehow not working for you, which they don't explain, in adversarial, and then you just use it for two scenes with two jokes.
I mean, I didn't care that much they didn't explain, but it did seem weird that she seemed like such a bigger part of her life in the regular universe.
Right.
And then she's not, doesn't have more to do
in
the meta world.
That's kind of what I meant. Like, almost if she was the one that, you know, took Adam Devine, it almost feel like it had more conflict. I get why it's Chopra, because it's supposed to be all in her head, and the reason why Chopra's in her head is specific, which you'll see in the movie, but it still kind of felt like they dropped Betty Gilpin, who I thought was really good, you know, in her few scenes.
Would have possibly been a better choice for that role of the girl who is dating the guy she likes, because there's already an adversarial relationship there.
Exactly.
It feels like unnecessary to throw an extra person, but that does play into a sort of like a joke you see coming from, not even joke, a cute moment you see coming from the first 10 minutes
of
the film.
I think I mentioned to you that I was more upset when we walked down the movie that it's like, I thought she was like too smart for a lot of things. She let herself be a doormat. And I get what you disagree with me that you do know people who aren't very assertive, but they're very smart people.
Oh yeah.
But that one where she misses that was so dumb. And I'm just like, it kind of really had to shoehorn that in for her to not notice.
They had to actually say, because they actually say the line at one point in the real world where a friend is like, you are so blind to even the existence of love, and points out the way she just doesn't occur to her that something would be love, even with other people. Her brain has a blind spot for it. So, I mean, they do explain that, even though it's kind of like, okay, well, that's,
even
that had to be there to
super.
That they had to add that just to explain it, because no one else in the world would have missed that.
Yeah, exactly. I still feel like that was maybe a little over the top. I get suspension of disbelief for a movie, but
sure.
Even there, it's like you can't have it both ways. Where your character's supposed to be really smart, and then that's supremely blind to even the people she cares about. Like, I get strangers that she walks through the romantic encounters, but it's like, the people you actually care about, you pay a bit more attention, even some, you know, slightly.
One would hope, but there's been a couple girls in my life when I was younger who would, like, right before we would go our separate ways, like, one would move away, would go, you know, I always wondered why you never asked me out. And be like, what? I've had a crush on you for years. I didn't know. How did I know?
I think we She's all like, have-
I ask you out all the time. Believe me, that shit happens.
No, we all have those stories. That's true.
I did not find that specific plot thread unbelievable at all. They were best friends. You know, you don't really think of your best friend in that type of light, especially when you're kind of a bitter towards romance type of person. Right. I could see that happening.
Well, she had just given up any thought of there even being
and
a
she
romance
has,
in her
it's
life.
Very clear that she had low self-esteem.
Yeah.
So I completely understand her not even feeling that she's worth someone looking at her.
You can be very smart and be very confident about being smart and mm-hmm. also think that you're, like, not worth
yeah.
loving.
No, true.
You know, like, for sure. But let's go to final thoughts. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I like this a bit less than you. Overall, I do think it's fun. It's cute. It's got some great moments. I do really love the cast. Rebel Wilson, this is one of the movies where she actually gets to shine a lot, and I really love that. Liam Hemsworth is just having the most goddamn fun you can imagine, especially that final song. He's literally out there with a saxophone just hamming it up, and it's great. It's sort of Adam Devine's most entertaining work, I think, because he's not playing it over the top. I think he's really hit that medium where he knows what he's doing. And I definitely really love Brandon Scott Jones as the gay best friend, where he is just hamming it up as well, where he's just like, yep, every 80s gay stereotype, let's play this. And it's pretty fantastic. Overall, though, I don't know. I don't know if I could really recommend this outside of, like, a matinee, or if you're really, really looking for just a cutesy
wrong show. Movie. Wrong show, Ben. Wrong show.
Yeah, yeah. You're too late for that one. Yeah. You're right. No, I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10 random cute couples in the park.
What about you, Kim?
I'm going to pull out my chick card and kind of trump you guys. This movie wasn't made for you. It was made for me in my like. People like me. That's what I'm trying to say. I had a lot of fun in it. I thought it's definitely not an Oscar-worthy film by any stretch of the imagination, but it had fun. I think it had a plan at what it wanted to say, and it said it. And while it was making its point, it was genre-savvy, which I really enjoy. I haven't really seen something like this since Cabin in the Woods, where they had, like, the stoner character just kind of tell you what was happening. I really enjoyed everything she said, and her facial expressions are hilarious. I could just watch this movie in silence and laugh at her reacting to things. Rebel Wilson is a force to be reckoned with, and I want to see more of her. I think, a lot like Ben, the cast was super interesting. I enjoyed every character for all of their different quirks and the stereotype they were playing. And it wasn't too long. I would not recommend someone go out to see this movie, but I would recommend they check it out if it happens to be in a red box or something. I wouldn't say no, put that back. That being said, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
Sassy gay
best
friends.
Just said this was more for you than for us, and he gave it a higher review than you did.
Oh, I didn't listen to all of
that. He gave it a 6.5. Yeah, you just tuned Ben out. I know, we all did.
I'm sorry, kidding. Ben.
You're still here?
You made 3 points.
I'm a solipsist. I just believe the cats
are 6.75 sassy gay friends.
Just so it's a little
exactly.
bit above
him. Don't give it a 7.
And, well, I hate to tell you.
No!
I just really did like this
film. It's one of those things, like, I think that this film does exactly what it needs to do. It is perfect for its audience. It's just a shame that it didn't try just that much harder. Because this could have been one of those, oh my god, I'd recommend to anybody, this is a romantic comedy you totally have to see, that anyone would enjoy. And I think it's one of those ones, like, if you're stuck on the Valentine's Day date with your girlfriend who's dying to see it, you're not going to hate this movie. You're going to go like, oh, okay, it's making fun of the things that I do, in fact, hate about romantic comedies. It's just that while there are quite a few funny parts in here, while there is a cast that knows exactly what type of movie they are in and play that to the hilt, while there are lots of brightly colored and fun sequences to watch, it's just as on the nose as the romantic comedies that it's making fun of. Like I said, I think it's a huge mistake to tell your audience ahead of time everything that's going to happen in the fucking movie in the first 10 minutes and then just go and do that. It really took away the punch of the jokes for me. And I found myself annoyed often going like, I would have laughed at that if you hadn't already told me that in the beginning of the movie. So, like I said, mixed. But it's hard for me to come down too hard on this because there's, other than that, There's nothing really that inherently wrong with it. I think there's a lot of people who are going to really, really enjoy the hell out of this movie. And I give it 7 out of 10 cat-sized lobsters.
Damn you, Chris.
See? Maybe it's for me. Maybe I
give it an 8.
Maybe I have
over. It's better than Avengers.
You don't know.